Welcome back to the Uncharted Entrepreneurs Podcast, and I'm your host, Sherry Miter. And today we're going to talk with Neil Gordon, and I'll tell you a little bit about Neil in a minute, but I want to let you know what our conversation is about, because if you're like me, you might be starting to go back to some real in-person networking events, or maybe you're online doing this, and you just want to make sure that you stand out from the crowd and you know how to say what you do in like 20 seconds or less. And what if you could do that in a way that really captivated people's attention and in a way that they would remember you, even if you are in a room of 20, 30 other entrepreneurs, other leaders? And some of them may even do what you do. That just happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was at a live and in-person networking event, and there were three other coaches there. So I would have loved to have had the information Neil shares today before that event so that I could have stood out in the crowd. And that's what we want, right? We want to go beyond just having our mediocre elevator pitch into something that really makes a lasting impression. And that's what Neil Gordon does. He teaches us how to take that mediocre pitch and turn it into a beautiful, he uses a silver bullet method to turn it into what he calls an elevator speech so that people do remember us. But who is Neil Gordon? So Neil Gordon, our guest today, he helps world-renowned founders, keynote speakers, and best-selling authors sharpen their message so their audiences can't resist taking action. A little bit about Neil. He helps them, these leaders and entrepreneurs and influencers, streamline their message and convey their value in unexpected ways. They have gotten six-figure book advances, have been seen on shows like Ellen and Dr. Oz, and have doubled their speaking fees. Prior to becoming a communications expert, Neil worked at the editorial staff of Penguin Random House, where he worked with New York Times bestselling authors. He has been featured on NBC Palm Springs, Forbes, Fortune, and Inc.com. Neil is also a VIP contributor for Entrepreneur, with three of his articles making it to the number one spot on the website's most popular post. In his spare time, Neil enjoys stand-up paddleboarding and yoga and has spent time on both the East and the West Coast. So get ready, take some notes, put your thinking caps on, because this episode will leave you thinking about how you can perfect your elevator speech. And when you're all done, make sure you head over to Neil's website. I'll put the link in the show notes and check out his little fun 3-minute quiz on what kind of speaker are you. We touched a little bit about it in our conversation today, but it's really a fun quiz. I was an owl, so I would love to hear from you. What's your speaker type when you're all done listening to today's podcast? Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Uncharted Entrepreneurs Podcast. If you are ready to tap into your God-given strengths, discover simple success strategies, and set that dream that's buried in your soul free, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm your host, Sherry Miter, a visionary strategist, a highly driven entrepreneur, and a lover of adventures. I'm here to help you navigate the sea of business and life and show you the true freedom of being an uncharted entrepreneur. If you are ready to tap into bold courage and live the life you're called to create, join me on this journey. Let's untie those dock lines and set sail. We are going into uncharted territory. Welcome to the Uncharted Entrepreneurs Podcast, Neil. I'm excited to dive into our conversation today.
I am as well, Sherry. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't we start, if you just want to jump in, introduce yourself, and just tell us how. I'm always fascinated by people's backstories. Like, how do they get where they are today? So tell us your story and what you do and how you got here.
Well, as a communication expert and as a person who used to work in book publishing as an editor and working with all of these high-end authors and all of that, what I'm supposed to say is, well, I was a real bookworm growing up, Sherry, and I always read everything I could get my hands on and all that. And that's just really, really, really not true, in that I grew up hating reading I hated reading from about second grade on. And I just really tried to coast through without ever opening a book, and especially required reading for school and all of that. And I was fortunate to get good grades anyway. And it wasn't until the end of college that I just started picking up some light reading because a friend of mine encouraged me to check some books out. And then when I graduated from college and moved to New York, I needed an escape from the subway, from the loudness, from the busyness of it all. And so I started reading a more substantive book that was recommended by the same friend, actually. It was called A Prayer for Owen Meany, and by author John Irving. And it just led to this whole worldview shift. Like, just the events of the story just kind of messed with me to the point where I was like, everything I thought I knew about life is totally wrong and all that, and which is pretty typical of a 22-year-old. But as a result of that shattering of my worldview, I just read everything I could find by John Irving and a whole bunch of other authors too. And I just analyzed. How could the written word in that case be so powerful? And on the other side of that, I just came out of it with some insights, some raw editorial insight. And fast forward a few steps, and I got a job in my late 20s as an editorial assistant at Penguin. And that set me on the path. And I just, the expertise that I developed in communication just happened in, after being at Penguin for a few years, I went out on my own and just found myself observing everything I could find about TED Talks and everything else that I could consume.
Right. I love that. And how do you label yourself? Are you like a communication expert today, or what do you really kind of like call yourself?
That seems like a pretty good all-purpose label. I mean, sometimes I get a little more specific and say like a messaging expert, perhaps. Mm. I mean, because a lot of my clients and followers and all of that, they are public speakers or authors, and they have a lot of expertise, and they're just trying to get a leg up and try to create the kind of movement around their expertise that they know could serve the world around them. And so it becomes a really significant undertaking without the kind of clarity that messaging and understanding what your message is affords them.
Right. And I know a lot of the listeners that we have on the Uncharted Entrepreneurs, they're either entrepreneurs or they're leaders. And some do public speaking, some do not. But I know we were talking about before we hit the record button, it seems like everybody needs to know how to introduce themselves. Everybody needs to know how to have that great, and I hate the term elevator pitch, but it really is that as the elevator pitch. And I know you have some great, you know, a great formula for that, a great tips and stuff for that. But what are some of the mistakes you see people make when they're taking these great ideas and they have all this great information to share with people, but they just struggle to get it out in a good way?
Well, I love the way you framed the question there, Sherry, because they have all of this great information, like you just said, and the mistake they make is that they share all of their great information. Now, bear with me on this one. The mistake, like somebody, let's say somebody has been developing expertise for 20, 30 years, and that's a lot of knowledge. And the person they're talking to doesn't have any of that knowledge. And so when someone asks, what do? They launch right into all of this knowledge. Well, I'm a blank and I do this, and that, because it's really important to blah, 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 blah. And when we do that, we blah, 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 blah. And so it's really powerful to see all the people who I help when we do blah, 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 blah. And there's just so much dense information. Not to mention, another side mistake is they use a lot of jargon to convey that information too. A lot of advanced technical terms or even made up terms if they're really precious about their intellectual property or something like that. And so they're just really, really focused on everything about their world. And we can colloquially call it sort of like the show up and throw up kind of thing. It's like they just,
I was
like,
just about to say that. I've used that term.
Writing. Yeah. It's just like, what do you do?
Right, exactly.
I will give you all of my life in the next minute and it'll be amazing. No, it's not going to work out. So what do we do instead? And there's lots of different ways you could approach this, but what I find is that the simplest and most direct way to draw somebody into your world is to not start with your expertise, with your message, with your solution, but rather to frame it in the context of a problem they care about solving.
I love that. Yeah.
So yep. It just becomes a matter of, if you're talking to let's talk about an executive business coach type person, right? And they would say, oh, well, I'm an executive coach and I help all sorts of executives to really get their teams going and really become a powerful leader and all of this sort of thing, right? And instead you say, you know how executives are often struggling to get their teams engaged and to get their teams to really care about their work a lot? And some of them are like, oh yeah, sure. And what they often will try to do is they'll try to just try to like bring the hammer down, or they'll try to bribe them, or, you know, they'll provide all these typical ways of motivating their workforce, right? Well, that's not going to work as well. And so what you've done is you started with the problem. Someone said, oh yeah, that's totally an issue. I totally see how that's a problem. So they're suddenly invested. They're with you. And then the next step is you can provide the typical solution, the things that people try, but they don't work.
Okay. So if you were like at a networking event,
mm-hmm.
And how do you train people to do that? Because I'm thinking like, all right, I actually just went to my first live and in-person networking event last week for the first time in 2 years that, and you know, we all stand up and say who we are and, you know, all that stuff. And it was interesting because there were three other business coaches there that went before me. And I kept thinking through the whole time, like, what can I say that's going to make me stand out? And that's where I think your silver bullet approach to this makes me stand out. But I'm also thinking, like, would that be weird if I start with a question when you're doing your stand-up quick introduction?
Well, it's interesting choice of words there, Sherry, in that would it be weird? What you're ultimately doing by doing something that could be perceived as weird is you are disrupting expectations, and that will by its nature stand out. Now, standing out doesn't automatically become a good thing, obviously, and we all know that. But if you had, let's say, 30, like how long would you say people took to introduce themselves at this event?
It was less than a minute.
Less than a minute, right? So let's say 20 to 30 seconds, mm-hmm. right? If you have 20 or 30 seconds, and instead of saying, well, I'm a blank and I do this, 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 and that, and you just list all the things for that 30 seconds, what you could do is just say, so let's go keep with the executive coach example, just for simplicity's sake. And you stand up and say, hi, everyone. I'm Neil. And what many executives have found is that while they have a really powerful vision for the company and they're very committed to their work, they might struggle to inspire that level of commitment among their teams, among the people that report to them. And what they might do is just try to bribe them or bring down the hammer or something like that. But the key to motivating your workforce is actually blank. And as an executive coach, what I do is I help my clients to motivate their teams and to create a more engaged workforce and help the company's bottom line, something like that, right? Now I glazed over that crucial ingredient. The key to it is blank, because I'm not an executive coach, but I just provided there a very simple four-part structure for an elevator pitch. I prefer elevator speech, because I really like the idea of just having a little body of content that's a mini speech that empowers people rather than just tries to sell them on something. And that act of service will be the thing that differentiates you from anyone else, is that rather than talk about yourself, you're providing an idea that's of value to everyone else, a recipe for success. And then at the end, you kind of tack on, yeah, here's what I do to fulfill that recipe.
I love that. So if you broke that down into, is it, so it's kind of four parts that you teach?
Right. Right. So let's go through them one by one. And I'm actually going to skip the third and come back to it at the end.
Okay.
So the first part is, of course, establishing the problem, like executives struggling to motivate their workforce. Then the second part is identify typical solutions, the things that people typically do but are flawed and don't really work as well, like bringing down the hammer or bribing the workforce or something like that. I'll skip over the third part for a moment just to get to the fourth part, which is what we usually go right to, which is, here's what I do. I'm an executive coach and I do this, 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 and that. And at the end, in my example just now, I said, and I'm an executive coach and I help these folks to motivate their workforce and create and help improve the bottom line for the organization. We skip right to that usually, but I encourage you to use the first three parts to create a little context to help people to be primed to want to learn about you because you've just empowered them. Now, why have you empowered them? Because of that third part. You already mentioned it because we've talked about our work before we started our formal conversation for everyone today. And it's what we call the silver bullet. Now, the silver bullet is a very interesting technique that's been hiding in plain sight for 2,500 years. We go back to Aristotle. When you go into Brainy Quote and you see his most popular quotes, you see that he's got like this specific kind of sentence. And Sun Tzu in The Art of War, line 18 of the first chapter of the book, the line is, all of warfare is deception. And what he does in that one line, in that one chapter of the book of The Art of War, is distill his entire expertise, all of the book, all of what he knows about warfare, down to one single sentence. If you want to win a war, you deceive your opponent. And it's just the simple secret sauce-like sentence. With, I might have to paraphrase Aristotle's, I don't know that one quite as cleanly, but the aim of art is not its outward appearance, but rather its inward significance, something like that. And so it's like when he talks about art, he's distilled all of art down to a sentence, which is pretty powerful. And again, we're quoting Aristotle all these years later. 46 of the 50 most popular TED Talks have silver bullets, like Dan Pink, who says he's got a TED talk with tens of millions of views actually on motivation, like my executive coach example. And he says, the key to high performance is not rewards and punishments, but that unseen intrinsic drive to do things because they matter. And then we have some of the best-selling nonfiction books have silver bullets. And when you read them in the Kindle, when you can highlight passages in the Kindle and it aggregates all the people who've highlighted something, what we see is that the most highlighted passages in the book are also silver bullets. And I'm not sure if I remember the exact wording of this, but Yuval Harari has Sapiens, and he's got a really good one. And I might have to paraphrase this one too, where he says that you get large groups of strangers to cooperate by believing in common myths. The reason why people in religions cooperate is because they all believe in one myth. The reason why everyone in America cooperates, I mean, maybe not everyone, but a lot of people in America cooperate because they have the common myth of America kind of thing. And so he basically, that was kind of a bad example given the current times. But anyway, but that's the larger thing. And the larger point is got like 30,000 people highlighted that example, that passage in the book, and 30,000 people just highlighted it, never mind however many hundreds of thousands have bought the book, or millions. And so that all becomes a very clear indication that this certain kind of sentence is very powerful. And if you use that as that third part of your elevator pitch, people will start to have a kind of epiphanous moment. Oh, wow, I never thought of it that way. Or that was really powerful. Or, ooh, I got chills.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing, so it's more about, because I think sometimes we're so focused on us and what am I good at? What am I doing? It totally is turning that light to shine on the audience, the other people in the room, whoever it is we're talking to.
Right.
How it can make, and I'm not going to have my words right here, but give them that thought to have them pause and think and right?
And be empowered by it, and to have some, maybe even start brainstorming their own ideas, something like that. I mean, what you're speaking to actually, Sherry, is the silver bullet I have that encapsulates all of my work, which is that effective communication values the recipient over the sender.
I love that.
So the idea is to even make your elevator pitch, which again, we could consider actually an elevator speech, because the speech can be an act of service to everyone. If you create even a 30-second passage that's an act of service to your listeners, you will stand out. You stand up at a networking event like you just went to, and you create that momentary act of service, people will notice that. They're like, wow, how did he get that across in so little time? How did she get that across in so little time? And so that winds up being a very important part of how we really stand out with our message overall.
Yeah. So I'm totally on board with you, but I could see where some people might stop and think, well, wait, if that's what I'm doing, then I still haven't talked about me. I haven't told them what I really do yet.
Right.
Talk us through that thought process and why that's the wrong process to have, and why we want to, how we are going to make way bigger impact by doing your silver bullet way.
I really want to be clear that I'm not teaching people to never talk about themselves. I'm just saying, take the first 15 to 20 seconds to set up the idea that forms the basis of your work. And let's say you had a full minute to talk. Just spend that first 15, maybe 20 seconds, depending on how long it takes you to set everything up to get across your silver bullet. Just spend that first 15, 20 seconds setting it up. And then the rest of the minute, you can talk about yourself and share all of that. I'm just saying that the context that you could create in such a short amount of time, and the potential to really give people chills with your silver bullet, is a worthwhile way to disrupt the pattern of what everyone else is doing at that meeting. So if you had stood up and just said, you know, take those 15 seconds just to really set up that larger context and the bigger idea of your work, and then talk about yourself with your remaining time, they'll be that much more invested in hearing about you. And then you have like full ranges to talk about yourself as much as you want.
Yeah. And I could also see, like, too, when people make us stop and think, or I love that word, disruption, that it does leave that pause. Because going back to that networking event I was at, and it was a smaller, more intimate group, but there were still like 20-ish, 25 people. Mm-hmm. Honestly, besides the people that I had one-on-one conversations with, I couldn't really tell you what most of them did. Like,
right.
I think we so glaze over like what people are saying.
Right.
So much like, oh yeah, another one of them, you know. So
right.
See That's how right. even if we don't really get to the point of talking about us, because we made somebody have a new thought or go deeper in that thought.
Yeah.
They're going to remember. They may not even remember what our title was, but they're going to remember us because of the.
Right. That Maya Angelou thing, they'll remember how we make them feel kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that becomes a very important thing to remember, is that, especially given how fragmented we've become, both before the pandemic and since the pandemic, that hunger for a meaningful experience, for a real human connection, just is more pronounced than ever. And especially as we get back to live experiences, when we're in person again and all of that, people want to feel something. We've so many of us have numbed ourselves, or even just with virtual meetings and stuff, it feels numbing because we're not there with the person, and the proximity has real value. I remember when I was about to attend a conference in New York, and there was one of the veterans of that conference planned a happy hour for the night before. And so not everyone was going to go, but it's just, you know, a few people who just wanted to meet people beforehand and have some shared experiences all went. And I got there, and before everyone had gotten there was maybe 8 or 10 of us who were just standing in a circle talking. And one of them asked, "What do you do, Neil?" And I started with that structure that I said. And when I said effective communication values the recipient over the sender, I was interrupted. And I'm supposed to say, oh, how rude of them to interrupt my elevator speech. But really, it was wonderful because they interrupted me because they just had to talk about how, oh, yeah, it's so important to make it about the other person. And they were there was this little electric current of excitement through the group and talking. And eventually, they came, what do you actually do, Neil? And so I got to tell them what I do. So it did become about me eventually. But before we got there, there was a real investment in what I was talking about, which I believe is generally going to be a good thing as we get the word out about our stuff.
Right, right. So I'm sure you made way bigger impact in that moment. They remember that. They remember, oh yeah, he did this and got us talking about this great conversation. So that's almost, now I'm looking at this in a whole different light, that's the goal of when I'm doing the elevator speech and introducing is, can I make them pause? Start talking.
If you've gotten them to think about something, and especially in a way that's different than what they thought about prior to that moment, that's just worth its weight. It's worth its weight in gold. It's just such an amazing thing. One of my clients who engaged with me for public speaking specifically, and we worked out a silver bullet, and he was talking to this Indian magnate, like this guy, this like telecom, like superstar worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And he was talking to him about his work, but said his silver bullet. And the guy, I guess this was probably over Zoom. My client was in Europe and obviously the other guy was in India. And the wealthy guy so loved the silver bullet that he invited him, my client, to come work with, like to meet with him in India. But my guy had to go into the hospital and have some kind of surgery or something like that. And so the magnate actually got on a plane and flew and visited him in Europe and sat with him bedside at the hospital just so he could pick his brain some more. And that's the power of this kind of thing. It was just like, oh, wow, I never thought of it that way before. And look what somebody will do. I mean, not everyone's going to get on a plane and fly to you right away, but the people with means might. Just don't be surprised if someone of means chases you down like that when you get across your powerful idea.
I love that. I love that. So I know I keep my wheels are spinning. Like, how can I take, like, you know, I'm big on the strengths coaching. And I think this element of that is, you know, it might be something, you know, how most people take the approach of looking at what they don't do well and trying to be better at what they're not actually gifted at.
Right, right. And so if we were to start crafting a silver bullet, a simple trick is just to talk about the flaw or the problem in what other people do and juxtapose, like just juxtaposition, contrasting our way with the other way, zigging instead of zagging instead of zigging, whatever. That becomes very fertile ground for finding clarity around your idea. And so the flaw in what most people do is that they try to shore up, they compensate in their lack in where they're weakest and try to improve their abilities in where they're weakest. But the most powerful way to lead or the most powerful way to have an impact on the world is to double down on your strengths, right? And so that could be like the makings of a silver bullet around that, right? Right, we just create that contrast. Contrast isn't the only way to find that clarity or to say the silver bullet. It just becomes kind of like a simple go-to way to do it.
I love that, And I know, what are some other topics? So if somebody wants to go in, Neil, and learn more about what you offer, what you do, I know also if you just want to touch a brief minute on how do you help people when they're actually getting ready to do a speech? So we talked about our elevator speech, but when somebody's those that do presentations and things like that, how are the ways you help them and how can they find out more information about that?
Sure. Well, at a high level, what I like to do is engineer a full keynote or other kind of talk or speech not in what a lot of people do, which is what I call puddle jumping, which is just like, I'm going to have five things that you can do to achieve this goal. And I'm going to talk all about all five over the next 45 minutes of my speech. And they say, here's one thing, and here's another thing, and here's another thing, and so on and so forth. That just becomes sort of like the what you described with everyone going around the room and saying what they do. And just like, it just becomes noise at that point. What if instead you found your silver bullet and you engineered the entire talk to build up to that moment of revealing the silver bullet as a climactic moment, like a movie script, where you build anticipation and you get more and more, you get the audience more and more invested in here. What's this thing? What's the secret formula? What's the thing that we're missing here? So you create mystery at the beginning. How did we achieve this amazing? I like my folks to tell lots of stories and stuff. And so tell a story about someone who had an amazing outcome, but not reveal yet how they got that outcome. And then the silver bullet becomes that big reveal, like that aha moment. And then they're like, oh, I get it now. And then you can describe some of the practicum, some of the tips that surround that silver bullet after you reveal it. And it's not a cookie cutter. Everyone has to do the exact same thing. But at a high level, I tend to create that sort of structure. And yeah, people, the results speak for themselves. People are just blown away. They rush up with business cards. They offer more speaking gigs. My clients start making more money with their speaking gigs or start getting paid to do it if they haven't gotten paid yet. That's generally what it looks like. And finding me is the simplest thing to do is just find me on my website, neilcanhelp.com. And there's a fun little speaker quiz where you learn what's your speaker type and how can you use that type to be instantly captivate. Not too dissimilar from the strengths work that you do, is that you find what's your natural personality and find the most captivating way to start a speech right from the moment you start speaking. Mm-hmm. And so they're cute animal metaphors and all that. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I did do that real quick this morning, and I was an owl.
You were an owl. So that's exactly the owls are the types who like to teach. And what we think about teaching is owls are the ones who are most likely to do the show up and throw up, basically. But there's amazing opportunity to demonstrate things, to like think of not just the dry lecturer teacher, but rather the mad scientist type teacher who just does all these cool things with the beakers and stuff. And you could do really cool demonstrations for your audience right off the bat and or play a game with them or something. I'm going to play a little game with you guys just to get started here. And you just do something like that. And that can be very engaging and quite compelling, but it's still utilizing your natural teaching affinities to do that.
Yeah. And that was one of the things, because again, going back with the strengths, it's like, oh, this is so good because it ties so into that of knowing
exactly
what you naturally do best and just do more of it. So the same idea of how do you show up as your best self and just do more, lean into it instead of fighting it, just lean into it and be you.
I'm really a fan of what you just said just now, Sherry, because I see a lot of people, especially who are shy or maybe a bit introverted. They don't see themselves as speakers because they see all these wild razzmatazz type speakers. They see big presences like Tony Robbins or someone like that, or these polished speakers on the TED stage. And they're like, oh, well, I'm not really like that. So I don't think I should be a speaker because I'm just much more subdued and I don't want to bore everyone. But you could be incredibly subdued, but also incredibly captivating, especially if you make good use of pauses.
Yes.
And all of that. So I want our listeners to think about their presence as an expert and as a speaker, not based on some arbitrary sense of what that person should be, but who they are and how do they just bring those strengths up to be there to have their maximum impact.
So good. So good. And with that great statement, we are going to end our podcast. I have so many more questions, but this is where I and it goes on for an hour. I try to keep the podcast around a half an hour. So we're going to end with this. I will put the link to your website and that quiz in the show notes. So you can go in and take the quiz and let both Neil and I know, what is your animal type for speaking? I know that wasn't really our topic here. And I definitely am excited to kind of work on a new elevator speech that captivates rather than glazes over people.
That will be a battle well won in that regard.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Neil, for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me, Sherry. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, friend, thanks as always for listening to the Uncharted Entrepreneurs Podcast. I hope you found value in today's show, and I would love to hear from you. What were your biggest ahas? What were those golden nuggets that you're taking away? Hit the message button below and send me a message. Let me know what they were. And also, if you are a leader of maybe a network marketing team, and you're looking to move to that next promotion, that next level, that next achievement, but you're maybe feeling a little stuck and you don't know how to really tap into your own personal strengths to get there. Or perhaps you lead a small team of an organization, a small business. I would love to invite you to hop on a free call with me. Let's have a discussion on how we can really work together to take your natural talents, learn the skills to invest in them, and turn them into strengths so that when you show up, you're going to show up knowing that you are working in your most best, most confident, most empowered you every single day. Because when you do, you're not only going to be more productive, you're going to be happier, you're going to be healthier, and you're just going to lead a much better, more fulfilling life. So if that sounds good to you, I can't wait to have a conversation with you to see what's next. How can we work together? All right, my friends, as always, thanks for listening to the show. And as I always say, you know, life is short, so we've got to go out and enjoy this beautiful journey.